The TV Kid by Betsy Byers, read by Carrie Shale. Chapter 1. Lenny was in front of the motel, washing down the walk with a hose. He directed the spray on a chewing gum paper and some grass and twigs. He watched as the trash went down the drain. A truck passed on the highway, building up speed for the hill ahead. Lenny glanced up. He watched until the truck was out of sight.
"Aren't you through yet?" Lenny's mother called. "You've got to do your homework, remember?"
He turned off the hose.
"I'm through."
He started towards the office. At that moment, his mom turned on the neon sign, and it flashed red above his head. The Fairyland Motel. Vacancy. Lenny paused at the concrete wishing well. There was a concrete elf on one side, and facing him, Humpty Dumpty. With one hand on Humpty Dumpty's head, Lenny leant forward and looked down into the wishing well. On the blue-painted bottom lay 7 pennies, 1 nickel, and a crumpled mound wrapper. Lenny walked on to the office. As he went inside, he paused in front of the TV. A game show was on, and there were 5 new cars lined up on a revolving stage. The winning contestant could pick one of the cars, and if it started, he got to keep it. Only one of the cars was wired to start.
"It's the Grand Am," Lenny said instantly.
He felt he had a special instinct for picking the right box or door or car on shows like this.
"I know it's the Grand Am."
"Lenny, are you watching television?"
his mother called from the utility room.
"I'm looking for a pencil,"
he called back.
"Well, there are plenty of pencils on the desk."
"Where?"
"Oh, yeah, I see one now."
Lenny was hoping to stall until he could see if it really was the Grand Am, as he suspected. The contestant said he wanted to try for the Catalina.
"No, the Grand Am, the Grand Am,"
Lenny murmured beneath his breath. He found the stub of a pencil on the desk and held it against his chest like a charm.
"Lenny, I meant what I said about no television,"
his mom called.
"I know you did. No television at all until those grades pick up."
"I know."
The commercial came on. "Dr. Pepper, so misunderstood."
"Me and Dr. Pepper,"
Lenny mumbled. He knew he had 60 more seconds to stall now.
"Where did you say those pencils were?"
he called.
"On the desk."
The commercial ended, and the contestant was walking across the stage to the Catalina. He was getting into the car, fastening his seatbelt. At that crucial moment, Lenny's mother appeared in the doorway.
"The pencils are..."
She broke off as she saw him. She said sternly,
"Lenny, go into my room right now and start studying."
"I will. Just let me find out if it's the..."
"Now!"
In one incredibly swift move, it was like something out of an old-time movie, Lenny's mother stepped in front of him. She turned off the television. As the picture faded to one small dot, she and Lenny looked at each other.
"You didn't have to do that,"
Lenny said. He was hurt. He felt as if his mother had slapped him.
"Now I'll never know if it was the Grand Am."
"You've got to do your homework."
"Well, will you watch for me?"
"If you go right now."
"I'm going, I'm going."
He started from the office.
"Only turn the set back on, or it won't warm up in time. You'll miss it."
Once outside the room, Lenny stood in the hall and waited.
"I wish I was on TV,"
he said to himself.
"I wish I was getting in the Grand Am."
His mother came through the doorway. She took his shoulder and started him into her room.
"It was the Firebird,"
she said.
"Oh."
He was strangely disheartened.
"Well, I wish I was getting in the Firebird."
"Well, you won't be getting in anything till those grades pick up,"
his mom said.
"If you're thinking I'm too dumb to be on TV, well, half the people you see on those shows are dropouts. Most of the contestants are out of work."
"Len, will you please go into my room and start studying?"
his mom said tiredly.
"I simply cannot argue with you this way every night."
"I'm going."
As he went, he thought of himself getting into the Firebird, fastening the seatbelt, turning the key. He thought of his face lighting up as the engine started. However, he thought, walking slower, if he could go on just one game show, it had better be something like Let's Make a Deal, where knowledge didn't count. He would dress up like a pizza. And if he got in the big deal of the day, he would go for curtain number 2.
"Don't stall, Lenny."
"I'm not stalling."
He walked into his mother's room. His mom had set up a card table in the corner, and Lenny had to study there these days. It was the only place in the motel where there was nothing to do and nothing to look at. He couldn't even see out of the window without getting up and walking round the bed. His mother was still standing in the doorway. Lenny glanced at her. He said,
If you're thinking that I'm too ugly to be on television, well, you don't have to worry about that either. The uglier you are these days, the better. Ugliness is in. Start with science. Mom, have you ever had a look at that kid on all those meat spread commercials? I know I look as good as him, and they say he makes thousands of dollars. Lenny! He gets $320 for every one of those commercials. Think of it. The kid is sitting at home, probably watching himself on TV, and he is making $320. Lenny! And if you get on a soap opera, Mom, if you just walk in front of the camera, which anybody could do, for that you get $51. If you have five lines, you get $90. Lenny, stop this and get to your work. Of course, $5 goes to your agent, and $20 goes into a trust fund for when you get too old to perform. I read that in TV Guide. Lenny! All right.
They stared at each other for a moment. Then, with a sigh, Lenny flipped open his science book. He turned to the chapter on plants. There was a pencil hole in the page where, in anger, he had stabbed the book. With his mother watching, he stared down at the cross-section of a plant. To give the illusion that he was serious about studying, he put his finger on the first part of the leaf. Slowly, he moved his finger down the page, round the pencil hole. His mom watched a moment more, and then she turned and went back into the office. Lenny kept his eyes on the page. As he got to the picture of the stem, his eyes began to close. His mind drifted to more pleasant things. He saw his own face on TV, a close-up. He would make the perfect contestant, he thought. In the first place, he was eager and enthusiastic. In the second place, he was a little dumb, so the audience would identify with him and be glad when he won. And third, he was such a good sport, he would go along with anything. As the parts of the plant grew dimmer in his mind, his own face on TV grew sharper and clearer. The announcer's voice, hushed with urgency, replaced the sound of the trucks on the highway. He dreamed. Chapter 2.
And now, Lenny, you have won over $3,000 in cash and merchandise. And more important, you have won the chance to spin our vacation wheel. How do you feel about that, Lenny?
Real good, sir.
Then join me over here at the vacation wheel. Now, Lenny, I don't have to remind you that up there on the wheel are 20 all-expense-paid vacations to places all over the world, do I?
No, sir.
That's 20 all-expense-paid vacations. You can go to Rome, to London, to Paris. You can go to beautiful Hawaii, exotic Mexico, or sunny Spain. All in all, there are 20 wonderful all-expense-paid vacations up there on the wheel. But, Lenny, as you know, there are also what we call our zonk trips. How do you feel about those, Lenny?
Well, I hope I don't get one.
And that's what we're hoping, too, aren't we, folks? Hear that applause, Lenny? They're all with you. Now, step up close to the vacation wheel. That's right. The three zonk trips, as we call them, are here, and here, and here. Try not to land on them.
I will, sir.
All right. Put up your hand now, Lenny. Right here on the vacation wheel. And, Lenny, give it a spin.
Here goes.
Good boy! The wheel is spinning, folks. Lenny really gave it a good spin, didn't he? Where do you want to go, Lenny?
Any of those places is all right with me.
Except the zonk places, right?
Right.
It's still spinning, and now it's beginning to slow down. Watch the wheel, folks. Where is Lenny going? To Paris? Rome? London? Oh, it's almost stopped. It looks like Egypt? No. Rio? No. Oh, no. Look at that, Lenny. You have landed on number 13, one of our zonk trips, and I don't have to tell you what that means.
It means I'm gonna have to take a zonk trip.
Right!
Where?
Well, let me look in my zonk envelope. Oh, Lenny.
What?
Oh, Lenny.
What? What is it?
Oh, Lenny!
What? I want to know. What is it?
Lenny, you are going to have to spend one full night, all expense paid, in a haunted house.
A what?
Yes, Lenny, you heard correctly. You are going to haunted house number 13, located right on the outskirts. That's the dark, scary outskirts, I might add, of beautiful downtown.
But I don't want to spend the night in any haunted house.
Of course you don't, but you take your chances, Lenny, just like all the other contestants. Remember that paper you signed when you came on the show?
Yes, but I didn't... I mean, I couldn't... I mean...
Oh, all right, Lenny, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You go to the haunted house, spend one night there, and if you survive... I say, if You survive. Then you can come back next week, and we'll let you spin the vacation wheel again. How about that?
But, sir, couldn't I just take my $3,000 in cash and merchandise and...
How many want to see him take the cash and merchandise and go home? Silence. How many want to see him go to the haunted house? Wild applause.
But, sir...
See, the audience is with you. Hear that applause? Well, it's time for a commercial break now, but stay with us, folks, for the second half of Give It a Spin, the show where you pick your prizes and we see that you take them.
Chapter 3.
Lenny?
His eyes snapped open as quickly as a puppet's. He said,
Yes'm? Have you finished your science?
His mother was standing in the doorway, her hands in her jeans pockets.
Practically. You know all the parts of the leaf?
I think so.
And the stem?
I think so. I get mixed up on some of them.
Which ones?
These.
He made a circular motion that took in the entire page.
Well, as soon as you're sure of them, Lenny, you bring your book into the office and let me call out the questions.
She sighed.
I wish that man was still in 314. The one from Decatur, remember? Now that was a smart man. He could have helped you with your science.
Lenny didn't answer.
And that man was a slow starter, just like you, Lenny. He told me he didn't learn a thing until he was 11 years old. He said people thought there was something wrong with him.
Lenny didn't answer. His mom paused. Then she said,
I don't want you getting another bad grade in your test tomorrow. I don't want to get one either, he said.
His last science grade had been 23 out of a possible 100. Staring down at that 23, it had been written in red pencil and circled. Lenny had for the first time felt the real meaning of numbers. His arithmetic teachers had been trying to get that across for years. Numbers mean something. Well, the arithmetic teachers were right, he had thought. A number, just a number, could ruin a person's whole day. Week, maybe. Lenny had not started feeling like himself again until he was home watching a rerun of The Lucy Show, in which Lucy thought Mr. Mooney had turned into a monkey. When Lucy came back from lunch, saw the monkey sitting at Mr. Mooney's desk, and staggered back with her mouth open, that was when Lenny smiled for the first time since science. As Lenny's mother went to the office, Lenny rested his chin on his hand and stared at the pictures. The leaf, like something in a dream, moved farther away. Slowly Lenny closed his eyes. His mind, like an unmoored ship, drifted to other shores. The interruption by his mother was like a station break.
And now, the announcer said in Lenny's mind, back to Give It a Spin. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dink McLeod again. Now that our young contestant is gone, I want to let you in on a little surprise we have planned for him. See, our staff has concealed in that haunted house, the haunted house where Lenny will be spending the night, 13 of the scariest, most terrifying movie and television monsters of all time. We have Dracula and Frankenstein's monster there in the living room. The werewolf is in the kitchen. The mummy is in the sewing room, and out in the backyard, folks, will be Godzilla, Mothra, Scorpo, and a giant behemoth. How about that for a scary quartet? Applause. We'll have hidden cameras in every room of the house to catch Lenny's reactions, so you won't want to miss our next show. Remember now, tune in next week to see what it's going to be like for young Lenny in Haunted House number 13.
Lenny?
His mom called from the motel office.
Yes'm? I'm taking some extra towels to 316. I'll be right back.
Yes'm.
I'll call out the questions then.
Right.
He didn't open his eyes. He didn't want school books and science and his unfortunate position at the card table to intrude on his dream. He smiled to himself. He was thinking of entering the living room of the haunted house. What a sight he would be. His knees would be trembling, his heart pounding, his eyes would be rolling round in his head like marbles. He would be holding out his hands in a blindly terrified way. He would bump into Dracula.
Good evening.
Lenny would glance up. He wouldn't have seen Dracula because of the black outfit. Now he would see the white face.
Welcome.
Lenny's eyes, bulging almost out of their sockets, would see that Dracula's fangs were bared. His black cape was raised. Dracula would bend low, aiming for Lenny's neck. Lenny would scream, turn, run for the door, and crash right into Frankenstein's monster. Before the huge, unmatched hands could close round Lenny's throat, Lenny would scream again and make a headlong dash for the safety of the kitchen. He would lean against the wall, eyes closed, catching his breath. His hands would be clutched over his pounding heart. Suddenly, Lenny would feel something furry beside him. He would open his eyes. At that moment, he would look out of the window and see the full moon, a werewolf's moon, and the something furry beside him had to be... Very slowly, making no sudden moves, Lenny would ease over to the door. Then abruptly, he would rush into the sewing room and slam the door.
I'm back, Lenny. Are you ready for me to call out the questions? No. Leave me alone for a few more minutes.
But I'm almost through.
He began speeding up his dream. He thought of himself running out of the back door of the house into the yard. It would be dark despite the full moon, and in a panic, Lenny would dash straight into Godzilla's big toe. He thought of himself falling back, gasping with fright. He would stagger around Godzilla's instep, uttering incantations and cries for help, and plunge straight into Mothra's wings. After narrowly escaping being fluttered to death, he would have a long, panic-stricken dash to Scorpo, the scorpion as big as a Boeing 747. Lenny would cringe there, too scared to move, awaiting the final sting. At that moment, a voice would come on the loudspeaker, concealed in the trees.
Lenny! Lenny, can you hear me?
He would be too frightened to recognize his own name.
No, no, not Scorpo,
he would be sobbing.
Anyone but Scorpo. I'm allergic to stings.
Lenny, can you hear me? This is Dink McCloud, and I'm here with our Give It a Spin audience. And Lenny, we have had hidden cameras on you ever since you got to Haunted House 13.
You've had cameras on me?
That's right, Lenny.
The whole time?
Lenny, we got the whole thing!
He would realize then what a pitiful sight he must be. Here he was, cringing on the ground, sobbing at Scorpo's feet like an infant. He would raise his head. He would give a shaky laugh. He would dry his eyes on his shirt.
Did you have hidden cameras in the house, too?
He would ask.
That's right, Lenny.
In the, sewing room, too?
He would remember how he had come into the sewing room and tried to hide behind the mummy, which, in the dark, had looked like a ragged sewing dummy.
The sewing room, too. We're just sorry you didn't go upstairs, Lenny, because upstairs we had the son of Frankenstein and the blob and the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Gee, I'm sorry I didn't get up there, too.
And now, Lenny!
Lenny! It was his mom. Bring the book out onto the porch. These two school teachers from Wilmington checked in, and they say they'll help you. In a minute. They haven't got all night, Lenny.
She sounded impatient.
I'm on my way.
He sat with his eyes closed, speeding up his dream even more.
And now, Lenny, we have a car waiting to bring you back to our studio to collect over $3,000 in cash and merchandise. How does that sound to you?
Real good, sir.
And more important, you get another spin of the vacation wheel.
Oh, well, never mind about that, sir. I'll just take my cash and...
We'll leave it up to the audience. How many want to see Lenny come in and take his cash and merchandise?
Silence.
How many want to see him spin the vacation wheel?
Wild applause.
See, the audience is all with you, so come on in, Lenny, and give it a spin.
Lenny, these school teachers are leaving for Nashville at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Lenny rose. He picked up his book. As he carried it through the motel office to the porch, he went over the strange words for the first time.
Petiole, stipule.
Chapter 4. Lenny leant over his desk, pencil in hand, waiting for the science tests to be passed out. He always got a worried feeling when he was waiting to take a test. Even if he knew everything there was to know about a subject, something that had never happened, he knew he would still be worried. He erased a mark on his desk and then penciled it back. He beat out a rhythm from the Addams Family, snapping his fingers when he got to the two clicks. He jiggled his leg. He turned to the boy sitting next to him and said,
"Hey, Frankie, is the petiole the stem or is the stipule the stem? I'm mixed up."
Frankie shrugged. He turned around.
"Letty Bond, is
the petiole is the stem,"
she said in a bored voice.
"The stipules are extra leaves."
She clicked open her ballpoint pen. Lenny turned back to the front of the room and raised his hand.
"Miss Markham?"
"Yes, Lenny."
"Can we take our tests in pencil, or do we have to have a ballpoint pen?"
"Pencil's fine."
"But can we use pen if we want to?"
He asked this on behalf of Letty Bond, who he thought might be growing anxious.
"Either one is fine."
Lenny's throat was dry. The tests were coming. He put down his pencil, wiped his hands on his shirt, and picked up his pencil. He took the tests from the girl in front of him, selected the top one, and passed the rest to Letty Bond.
"Well, here we go,"
he said with false liveliness. He glanced at Letty Bond.
She had already written her name at the top of the page and was ready to take on the first question. Lenny turned back to his desk. The test was mimeographed in purple ink, and for a moment Lenny had a vision of another red 23 at the top of his. He let out his breath in one long, unhappy sigh. He felt like writing the 23 there and saving Miss Markham the trouble. Glancing down the page, he decided to skip the first part, which was fill in the blanks, and go on to the second part, which was a plant with all the parts to be labeled. He had done that last night for the schoolteachers, twice. Very carefully, he printed the word petiole in the line opposite the stem. Then he looked at the word. It looked wrong. Quickly he turned his pencil and erased the word. He wet his lips. He wanted to turn round and ask Letty Bond if she was sure the petiole was the stem. It seemed to him... Nervously, he printed petiole back in the same space. He printed in four more words, and then he got up. With his eyes on his paper, he went to the teacher's desk.
Miss Markham? Yes, Lenny?
Is that word spelt right?
I'm sorry, but I can't give you any help after the tests are passed out.
Oh. He stood there for a moment, staring down at the word he had written. Stupile. He had never felt more miserable in his life. He gave Miss Markham a weak smile. He said,
I feel kind of stupile myself today. I do believe, though,
Miss Markham went on kindly, smiling back at him,
you should look at what you've written very carefully. There may be something wrong.
Thank you, Miss Markham.
As Lenny hurried back to his desk, Miss Markham said,
Remember, spelling counts, class.
Lenny erased the word and respelt it. He filled in two more blanks and erased one. His test now had a worked-over look. He had worn through the paper in two places. He thought that anyone who thinks school isn't hard ought to take a look at his paper. He bent over his desk, wet his pencil point, and filled in another blank. He went on to the multiple choice section and filled in three of those. He glanced again at the word steepile.
Time's up, class,
Miss Markham said. Lenny looked up, startled. He turned to Frankie.
Are you through?
Frankie shrugged.
Are you through, Letty Bond? I've been through since 10:30,
she said. He glanced at her desk. She was writing a note to someone named Anne. It started,
Am I bored?
Lenny spun round and glanced in desperation at his test. Only half of the blanks were filled. Quickly, he began filling in the rest, guessing, putting anything down so that Miss Markham would see a full, completed sheet when she got to his test. That was bound to make a better impression.
Lenny!
It was Miss Markham.
Yes'm.
He kept writing. He did not have time to look up.
I have to have your test now.
Yes'm. The next class is coming in.
One more word. In desperation, Lenny kept writing. Cammy Hagerdorn was standing by his desk, waiting to take Lenny's seat. Lenny looked up.
Hard, huh?
Cammy said.
Hard for me.
Lenny sighed. He got up, dropped his test on Miss Markham's desk, and went out into the hall. Shoulders sagging, he went slowly to World Studies. Chapter 5.
How'd you do on your science test?
His mom didn't glance up as he came in the office door. She was looking at the guest register. She was going over the names carefully, as if she were hoping they would multiply like amoeba and fill the page.
Oh, all right. Really?
She looked up, smiling.
I think so. I knew you'd do well.
She leant forward on her arms.
And it wasn't the school teachers either. It was all that studying you did.
He glanced at the TV set. Farmer Fred was on. He was yelling, Pull up your milking stools, boys and girls, and get set for Farmer Fred and his cartoons! Slowly, Lenny started back to his room. The sounds of the first cartoon washed over him. It was Tweety Bird and Sylvester. Tweety Bird was crying,
I did! I taught Putty Tat!
His mom called,
Oh, Lenny, would you take a rollaway bed to 314?
Yes'm.
As he came back through the office, pushing the bed, he saw Sylvester was sawing a hole in the ceiling over Tweety Bird's cage. Lenny walked slower.
The bed, Lenny! Just let me see him fall to the floor.
Sylvester finished his circle in the ceiling and fell with a crash to the floor. He pulled himself up in the shape of a round paper doll.
I'm going,
he said before his mother could remind him again. He pushed the bed out of the door. There were three rooms occupied at the motel that afternoon. A farmer with a station wagon of roosters was in 310, a salesman was in 316, a family of five had just checked into 314. Lenny knocked at the door.
Here's the bed,
he called out.
Come in.
Lenny opened the door and pushed the bed into the room.
The television was on, and Lenny glanced quickly at it to see if he could catch the ending of the Sylvester cartoon. On the screen, a man in a chef's suit was teaching the number 3 by juggling 3 pizzas.
3,
he said. A girl of about 5 was sitting on the edge of the bed, watching the chef. Her mouth was open a little.
Cartoons are on Channel 7,
Lenny said as he unfolded the bed. The chef took another pizza and started juggling.
4,
he said.
Will that be all?
Lenny asked formally. The woman nodded, and Lenny turned to the door. The chef cried,
5,
and the woman said,
see what else is on.
Lenny turned. He said, we get Farmer Fred's cartoons, Gilligan's Island, Bonanza, and Mike Douglas.
Oh, thank you.
Sure. Lenny started back to the office. His mother was sitting in one of the webbed chairs on the porch. It was her favorite time of the day, when she could sit out and chat with the guests. Now she was talking to the salesman in 316.
I delivered the bed,
Lenny said. She turned to him, her face bright.
Lenny, guess what this man sells?
I don't know.
Encyclopedias.
Oh.
Why, you should have been here last night, she turned back to the salesman. We had a regular school going on out here, didn't we, Lenny?
Yes.
She looked at him. She said,
listen, you go on in and watch TV if you like.
I thought I wasn't allowed.
You deserve it for doing so well on your science test.
Oh, all right.
Lenny went into the office and sank down on the plastic sofa. He reached for the TV knob. He began to feel a little better. He said to himself, I think I'll see what Hoss and little Joe are up to. He leant back on the plastic. It felt good and cool. He put his feet up on the plastic coffee table. He sighed with contentment. Chapter 6. Lenny came out of the back door of the motel. Here lay the broken fairyland figures, the dwarfs and fairies that had been out in front of the hotel until they crumbled. Lenny stepped round an armless Red Riding Hood and a headless fairy godmother. He climbed down the hill behind the motel and crossed the field. It was a Saturday, a bright October morning, and he had just finished his chores at the motel. Usually he sat in the office on Saturday mornings and watched cartoons, but this morning he felt the need to get away. The day before, he had gotten his science test back, and he had made a 59. The thought of that 59 still made him feel sick. Only 11 more points and he would have passed like everyone else. As soon as he had seen that 59, he had thought there should be some kind of patent medicine for moments like this. This had to be worse than acid stomach and sinus headache and low backache all rolled into one.
For that uncomfortable feeling that comes when you fail your science test, take Failies, the tablet that eases failure and makes you less afraid to fail the next time.
He would be on the commercial, sitting right at his desk in science class, pale and sick. He would drop 2 Failies tablets into a glass of water, drink, and a wonderful feeling of relief would come over him. The lines of tension in his face would relax. Color would come back to his cheeks. The teacher would walk back to his desk. She would lean down, smiling, and say,
I hope you've learned, Lenny, that with Failies, you never have to feel the pain of failure again.
Yes, he would say, for relief from the nagging pain of failure.
And then he and Miss Markham would smile at each other and say together,
take Failies, the failure reliever that requires no prescription.
The thought had raised Lenny's spirits for a moment. Then Miss Markham had rapped on her desk and said,
I want these tests signed by one of your parents, students, and returned on Monday.
Lenny had brought his test home and stuck it in his sock drawer. His mom had been too busy to ask about it. They had had 7 rooms occupied at the motel that night, but sooner or later she would. And even if she didn't, Lenny would have to get her to sign it. It was something he couldn't bear to do. When he disappointed his mother with his schoolwork, her mouth got as sad as a clown's.
This is our big chance, Lenny,
she had been saying ever since she had inherited the Fairyland Motel from her father. They had been heading for the motel on a Trailways bus the first time she had said it.
This is our big chance, Lenny. All a person can hope to get in this life is one good chance.
He had nodded, smiling at her. He had been as pleased about inheriting the motel as she was.
Now we can live like other people,
she had said. She had begun to hum. Her favorite songs were about home and going home. Now she was humming Country Roads. She stopped humming long enough to say,
you'll go to school regularly and make good grades. No more of this moving around.
They looked like people who moved around, Lenny thought, both in jeans and t-shirts, his mother's hair frizzled and his own uncut. But no more.
And I'll make a success of the motel. I promise you that. And I'll be a success in school, he'd said.
As he sat there on the bus, he saw himself as the end of a TV show. All his problems and troubles were over. The last crisis had been passed. He and his mom heading for home and happiness. It was as perfect as the ending of a Lassie show. He saw himself smiling while the credits rolled past his beaming face. Only that was the trouble with life, Lenny had found out later. He had expected things to change as quickly and dramatically as they did in Bad Breath commercials, one gargle and a new life. It hadn't worked that way. In real life, Lenny found out, problems didn't get wrapped up neatly between commercials. In real life, you moved, and all the things that were wrong with you moved with you. If you couldn't pass science in Kentucky, then you wouldn't be able to pass it in Tennessee either. Lenny wondered if this happened to other people, like presidents of the United States or famous TV stars. Did they get their lifelong ambition, thinking life would be perfect when they got to be president or when they got their own series, and then find out that all the things wrong with them were still wrong? Lenny walked quickly down the hill. He had come this way so often that there was a faint path in the deep grass. He came to the maple trees. The leaves were solid gold now, and he walked up the next hill. At the top were the ruins of two old campfires, black circles like a puff of breath from a dragon. The first time Lenny had seen the old fires, he had paused and planned a TV show about a dragon. Only one person, himself, knew about the dragon. He had trailed the dragon to his cave by following these double campfires, and the dragon and he had become friends. The highlight of the program came when the townspeople arrived at the cave to kill the dragon, thinking him responsible for the recent slaughter of sheep.
"Get out of the way, son. We're going in."
"But the dragon's my friend. He wouldn't kill anything."
"There's 17 sheep dead in the valley. Somebody killed them."
"Well, he didn't do it. He couldn't."
"Get out of the way, son. We got no quarrel with you."
"But he couldn't have killed the sheep, I tell you. He doesn't even have any teeth."
"What?"
"He's over 200 years old, and all he eats is bananas and tomatoes and once in a while a real ripe apple."
"Listen, the boy might be telling the truth. Seems to me my granddaddy said there was a dragon around here when he was a boy." "Your granddaddy Amos?" "My granddaddy Amos, and I recall him saying that dragon never hurt a fly."
"Well, then maybe it was wolves that got them sheep. If, as the boy and your granddaddy says, the dragon's harmless, we'll let him be."
That had been one of Lenny's favorite dreams. It had rerun for days. But now he stepped between the old fires without noticing and went down the hill beneath the red beech trees. Here the grass was as soft and green as official grass. Then he came to the lake. He stood for a moment looking at the water, at the places where the reflection of trees turned the water red and gold. He looked at the houses. Each of them was closed for the winter. The lake was really his now. Lenny went into the weeds and, pulling hard, brought out his boat. He eased it into the water. The boat was old and heavy. Someone had abandoned it long ago because the seats were half rotten and the boards leaked. When Lenny had first seen the boat, weeds were growing inside. Purple flowers were poking up over the sides as if they were waiting for a ride. Lenny got into the boat. Old and rotten as it was still sturdy enough to get Lenny across the lake. The first time he had pushed off in the boat, he had half expected to sink. He had imagined himself going down the way Coyote and Bugs Bunny and Sylvester did in old cartoons, just standing there, sinking, with a comical expression. That was the one thing he particularly liked about cartoon characters. When they walked out on a limb and the limb cracked, or they ran out on the air and then realized nothing was under them, they looked into the camera in such a comical way. If he had a camera on him, he could do the same thing. For a moment, he wished he were back at the motel watching the Saturday morning cartoons. Then, leaning on his oar, he pushed into deeper water. He began to row. Lenny was not supposed to be here, because this was a private lake. It had been dammed up and filled for the benefit of people who had houses there. No one else was allowed, but as long as nobody saw him, and there was nobody to see him now, he thought, it was all right. He kept rowing. Lenny knew more about this lake and these houses than anybody. There was not a house here that he had not entered at one time or another. Sometimes he went in through a window, sometimes through a door if he knew where the key was hidden. But however he got in, Lenny never took anything or did any damage. He just liked to look at other people's things. There was something about strange people's houses that fascinated Lenny. Perhaps that was because he had never lived in a real house himself, only in apartments and trailers and motels. Lenny's favorite house was the stone one with the willow trees in front. His finest hours had been spent in the tiny back room of the stone house, sitting on the floor, warmed by the sun coming in the window,
playing with 25-year-old tinker toys, or dealing out games of circus old maid or animal rummy, or looking through shoeboxes of stringless yo-yos and stones as smooth as birds' eggs. In the center of the lake, he suddenly wished he were back at the motel again. He tried to lose himself in his thoughts. What if the Partridge family's bus had broken down, and they were stranded? And while he was rowing across the lake, he started singing, and they heard him, and asked him to join the group, and gave him his own electric guitar. While he was imagining himself in a white fringed suit on stage with the Partridges, he lost interest. He shifted thoughts. What if he were the last person on Earth? He had seen that the week before on Thursday Night Movie. A plague had come and disintegrated everyone but one person. Now Lenny imagined himself that person, rowing across the lake, wondering what had happened to everyone else. He rowed more slowly. His oars dragged in the water. He felt as lonely as if he really were the last person on Earth. To change his mood, he imagined a commercial.
"To help that lonely feeling," the announcer would say, "buy Friend, the doll that's as big and real as you are."
He brightened. He imagined the announcer's voice saying,
"Yes, with Friend, you'll always have someone to talk to."
There would be a shot of him and Friend talking and laughing on a park bench.
"With Friend, you'll never have to go to the movies alone."
There would be a shot of him and Friend entering a movie theater. The announcer would say quietly,
"And remember, Friend comes with a special ID card that lets him enter all movie theaters and sports events for half price."
Lenny smiled. He began to row again. He felt better. He imagined the end of the commercial with him and Friend strolling along a country road. The announcer would say,
"Yes, take Friend everywhere you go," and
then a choir of 100 voices would sing,
"You'll never be alone."
Lenny was close to the shore now, and he eased up on his rowing. He drifted the rest of the way. When his boat touched shore, Lenny got out quickly. He pulled his boat up under the long, waving branches of the willow tree. He started for the house. Chapter 7. Lenny was on the front porch of the stone house now. He peered through the window. In his mind, the announcer reminded him,
"Whenever you enter an empty house, take Friend along. Yes, remember, no house is ever empty with Friend."
He imagined Friend peering through the window, too, glancing at Lenny, waiting.
"Let's go in," Lenny would say.
Friend would nod in agreement.
"Follow me."
Another nod, and Friend would fall in behind.
"Remember," the announcer would say, "with Friend there's never an argument. He does what you want, goes where you go."
The key to the front door was on top of the door molding, and Lenny took down the key and put it in the lock. He liked to enter with the key because it gave him a feeling of belonging. Going in through the window wasn't as good. His hand was on the doorknob when he heard a car on the road. He was startled. He had thought everyone at the lake had gone back to their regular houses. He stood deer-like for a moment, one hand on the key ready to turn, the other on the knob. Then his tension eased. "It's just somebody who made a wrong turn," he told himself. He took a step backward and caught sight of the car. It was a blue sedan, four houses away. Lenny could just see a glimpse of it shining through the trees, but he could see that the car was moving slowly up the road, pausing at each driveway. Lenny glanced over his shoulder at the lake. He saw the willow trees. He saw the bow of his boat poking through the leaves. Then he glanced back at the car. It was at the A-frame now, three houses away. Silently, Lenny closed the screen door, leaving the key in the lock. Bending low, he crawled to the steps. Here he hesitated again. He didn't think he could make it to his boat. And if he did, he knew he couldn't row across the lake without being spotted. In a crouch, he went round the porch. The car was two houses away now. It was behind the house with the artificial brick siding. And for the first time, Lenny got a good look at the car. It was a police car. His fear flared. He dodged quickly round the side of the house. He stood there a moment, flattened against the stones. Lenny had never heard that the police patrolled this area. Maybe they didn't as a usual thing, he thought. Maybe somebody had complained that their houses had been bothered. Maybe they had asked the police to keep an eye out. Maybe he was going to be arrested. The car was next door now, pausing at the driveway. Lenny was afraid he had waited too long. He glanced around, panic-stricken. Then in one fast move, he fell to his stomach and wriggled into the crawl space under the house. It was damp and musty here, a maze of discarded items and old tools and unused building materials. A cold air moved under the house, and Lenny thought he heard something scamper. Pulling himself along with his elbows, he scooted round a pile of shutters, a box of mason jars, and a watering can with the bottom rusted out. He was cold, and his jacket was back at the Fairyland Motel, hanging on a hook in the office. Lenny struck his head on a low water pipe and ducked. He was rubbing his head when he caught sight of the police car through the gap between some old plastic milk bottles and a tipped-over barrel. The police car slowed down and came to a stop at the driveway. To calm himself, Lenny thought of Friend. It really wasn't a bad idea, a product like Friend. Girls would always have someone to dance with at parties. Old people would never be caught talking to themselves. Right now, he would feel a lot better with Friend sitting beside him.
Whenever you feel afraid, reach for Friend. His hand is always there, in a plastic so lifelike you could hardly tell it from the real thing.
Lenny would touch the plastic hand, not for comfort, but to get Friend's attention.
You go out, he would whisper to Friend. Let them catch you.
One nod, and Friend would crawl out, willingly surrendering, his arms outstretched for the handcuffs. Against his will, Lenny's mind turned from Friend. He could see the policeman now. He was standing by the car. He leant down and spoke to the other policeman who was working the radio. Lenny couldn't hear what they were saying. He inched forward so he could see the policeman a little better. He was a big man. He had probably been strong once, but he had started going downhill. Everything about him sagged. His arms, his stomach, his neck. The other cop, Lenny could see him now too, looked like Tiny Tim with a haircut. It was so much like a television show that for a moment, Lenny half expected to see the two cops framed in an 11-inch black-and-white set. He wished suddenly it was a television program and that a commercial was about to come on. All Lenny would need would be 60 seconds to get away. The two policemen spoke again. The big cop looked up at the sky. Lenny waited. He crossed his fingers for luck. The policeman looked down at his shoe. Lenny thought for a moment he was getting ready to step back into the patrol car. Lenny's breath began to ease out in a long sigh of relief. Then, abruptly, the policeman turned and headed straight for Lenny. Chapter 8. Lenny inched closer to the large pile of stones by the chimney. He crouched behind it. He couldn't see the policeman now. The stones he was leaning against were as round and smooth as cannonballs. These stones were what had first impressed Lenny about the house. He had felt that only very particular people would choose stones like this. Ordinary people would just settle for rough stones blasted out of a quarry. These stones, if Lenny knew anything about stones, had been hand-picked out of some creek where they had been worn smooth by about 1,000 years of rippling water. Lenny still couldn't see the policeman, but he could hear his footsteps coming closer. The policeman tried the back door, paused, took two steps to the right. He was probably looking in the kitchen window now, Lenny thought, and then the policeman came down the steps and went round the right side of the house. Lenny pressed closer to the pile of stones and put his hand on one of them for comfort. Slowly, as if he were pacing off a distance, the policeman walked to the front of the house. Lenny could see his legs now, the crease in his pants. His shoes were as shiny as Christmas ornaments. If Lenny crawled closer, he could see his face in them. The policeman stopped, and for one terrible moment, Lenny expected the policeman to drop down on all fours and peer past the trash to where Lenny crouched. Lenny's face would shine in the darkness like a light bulb.
I see you, son. Come on out.
But the policeman moved on to the steps. He stood there a moment, shielded by the ferns. Then, one by one, he took the stairs. He went up as slowly as a trained bear. Lenny was almost under the porch, so he could hear every move the policeman made. The policeman looked in the living room window, peering in for a long time like a beggar. He took in the deer head over the mantel, the faded sofa, the big oilcloth-covered table, the electric motor somebody had left on the daybed. Lenny knew that room by heart, and if the policeman wanted to, if he bent to the left, he could see into the back bedroom, Lenny's room. He could see the chest, where all Lenny's favorite things were stored. The policeman moved to the front door. He opened the screen. There was a silence, and Lenny knew the policeman was looking at the key in the lock, wondering what it was doing there.
Hey, Bert,
he called.
Look here a minute.
The second policeman got out of the car. He walked round the house and took the steps to the porch two at a time.
Looks like somebody was going in.
Yeah, or trying to.
People ought not to leave their keys just lying around, careless-like.
Yeah, there ought to be a law.
Lenny rubbed his hand over the smoothest of the stones. It was so smooth, it could be an old dinosaur egg, Lenny thought. Here, under his hand, fossilized for 1,000,000 years, could be an embryo dinosaur that had never even had a chance at life. The idea appealed to Lenny. In good faith, some dinosaur had laid this egg, expecting a tiny, bright green miniature of herself to pop out, and instead it had wound up as an imitation rock under somebody's lake house. It would make a nice television show, Lenny thought. The show would open with a shot of the rock under the house, and then very slowly the rock would begin to crack open, and out would come a little dinosaur.
"Could be somebody inside," the policeman said.
His foot moved, and a little dust shifted down through the cracks in the boards.
"We'd better take a look."
The policeman turned the key in the lock and pushed on the door. He didn't know that you had to turn the knob, Lenny thought. Then, abruptly, the door opened, and the two policemen entered the house. Lenny couldn't hear them as clearly now, but every now and then a board would creak, and Lenny would know they were in the kitchen, looking behind the hot water heater. Or they were in Lenny's bedroom, or climbing the stairs to the second floor.
"Looks like everything's in order,"
Lenny heard the policeman say as he came out on the porch.
"Better take the key, though."
"Mr. Wilkins was right, I guess, about somebody going in these houses."
"Yep."
"Probably some kids."
"Nothing's been taken, though. It doesn't look like it, anyway."
"Not much to take, if you ask me."
In the crawl space, Lenny lifted his head in surprise and almost hit the water pipe again. How little those policemen understood. Why, the objects in this house were as valuable as the contents of a museum, to him, anyway. He would give anything to have the contents of the drawers in the chest. To Lenny, they would be like a mummy's possessions, special chosen things to be saved for a later life. Lenny would settle happily for just the old marbles, and the Parcheesi set, and the worn dominoes. The policeman came down the front steps.
"If it was me, I'd rather have a place over on Paradise Lake," one said.
They walked round the left side of the house. They were as perfectly in step as drilling soldiers.
"That's a real nice place. You can't build a house at Paradise Lake that don't have metal siding."
They paused at the corner of the house. Lenny could see their legs perfectly now. One of them said,
"Look at that. The drain pipe's busted. The steps'll be rotten by summer."
Then they walked, still in step, to the patrol car. They got in, and the little cop started the engine. Slowly, as Lenny reclined against the smooth stones, the car pulled away from the drive and moved on down the road. Chapter 9. For a moment, Lenny could not move. He was weak with relief. He had been spared, saved, let off the hook. A fish probably felt like this, Lenny thought, when he was caught by Marlon Perkins for Wild Kingdom, and then was mercifully thrown back into the water because he was too little.
"Although some fish are too little, you are never too little to be insured by Mutual of Omaha,"
Marlon Perkins would say later with a quiet smile. Lenny thought of the rejected fish hitting the sparkling water, sinking, dropping down where the water was dark and cold, and lying there, taking himself for dead. Then Lenny thought of the fish, realizing that life was still there, and in a burst of power going straight up, breaking the surface of the water like one of those trick porpoises at SeaWorld. The fish had good reason to be relieved, Lenny thought, especially since in the next scene Marlon Perkins would have arranged for a baby bird to be caught on camera being devoured by a boa constrictor.
"Even though this bird was caught by a boa constrictor, you will never be caught by unexpected trouble if you are insured by Mutual of Omaha."
Lenny rested a moment more because his legs felt weak. Fright took a lot out of a person, turned the legs to rope and the heart to a caged bird. And also Lenny was waiting. The police car had moved on round the lake, but this could be a trick. At any moment, the car could make a U-turn and come back. If the police were suspicious, that's exactly what they would do. Lenny decided he would stay where he was for at least another 15 minutes. He rested against the stones. To pass the time, he began thinking of himself as part of TV shows. He could see the listings in TV Guide.
"The Rookies. The cops are called to investigate a breaking and entering at a lake house. Making his TV debut is Lenny in the role of the criminal. Medical Center. A young boy faces permanent injury when he is tear-gassed by the police in an attempt to get him out from under a lake house. Making his TV debut is Lenny in the role of the tear-gassed boy."
He smiled to himself. Now that his fear had lessened, now that he was sure everything was all right, the danger from the cops didn't seem real. Actually, his only real worry had been about his mom. If they'd caught him, if they'd driven him to the Fairyland Motel, if they'd taken him into the office and said, "Ma'am, we have just placed your son under arrest," that would have been terrible. He remembered that only the evening before his mom had said she was proud of him. A family of four had driven into the motel at dusk, and Lenny had taken two cots to their room.
He had taken ice to the couple in 316, extra linen to 304, and he had made up 311 and 313 without being told. It was, he admitted, mostly to make up for the bad grade he had gotten on his science test, but his mom hadn't known that.
"I'm really proud of you," she had said. "All that studying the other night on your science, it will pay off, too. I know it will. And all the help you're giving me tonight. We're going to make it, Lenny. I know we are."
For a moment, Lenny lay there staring up at the cobwebs that had formed between the boards of the house. He was thinking about his mother. Then out of the corner of his eye, he caught sight of movement. He straightened. The police car was coming back. So silently, Lenny hadn't heard it. Moving in that slow first gear way, the car came to the driveway of the stone house and turned in. Chapter 10. Lenny waited. When he did not hear the car door open, he slipped forward until he had a better view. The policemen were not getting out of the car. Perhaps they were sitting there having a smoke, Lenny thought. Maybe a late lunch. The big sagging cop was probably downing a couple of Twinkies. Lenny smiled. He imagined the cop taking a bite, looking at the other cop, and saying,
"Freshness never tasted so good."
The smile faded. What were the cops doing? Anyway, Lenny thought, it was lucky that he had stayed under the house. That he hadn't scrambled out right away. If he had, he would have been yanked up by the heels like a newborn baby.
"Gotcha. All right, kid. Tell us who your parents are."
Lenny was lying on his side now. A cobweb beneath the flooring touched Lenny's cheek, but Lenny didn't even raise his hand to brush it away. He kept his eyes on the blue strip of the car. There was still no sound or movement.
"Come on. Come on, leave,"
Lenny begged beneath his breath. He crossed his fingers, then uncrossed them.
"Leave!"
Then abruptly, Lenny heard the engine start. He couldn't believe it for a moment. The wheels spun a little in the dust of the drive, and then the car backed up. It was moving fast. The car backed onto the road, moved forward, and drove out of Lenny's vision. It took the first curve in the road so rapidly that Lenny could hear the squeal of tires. He smelled dust. He did not move. He waited. 5 minutes later, the car got to the highway, and Lenny heard the high wail of the siren as the car headed for Bennettsville. Now Lenny relaxed for the first time since he had seen the car. "It really is over now," he thought. An emergency somewhere, an accident perhaps, a criminal on the loose, and the police were called to duty. He could crawl out in peace now. He turned onto his stomach and got set to scramble out. His left leg touched the pile of stones, and Lenny pushed himself forward. The pushing started a small slide. The rocks shifted. A few tumbled to the ground and rolled away like balls. Mixed with the sound of the shifting, rolling stones was another sound. A rattle. No sooner had Lenny heard it than he felt the sharp stab of fangs on his ankle. He jerked his head round, and in the shadow of the crawl space he saw a snake. It was so nearly the color of the ground that it seemed for a moment to be the ground itself set in motion. Instantly, Lenny twisted away. He rolled over twice. When he stopped and glanced back, the snake was moving behind the tipped-over oil drum. It disappeared in the shadows. Lenny drew his leg up to his chest and yanked up his pants. There was a yellow stain on his sock. Slowly, as carefully as if he were unwrapping something, Lenny pulled down the sock and looked at the two tiny holes in the inside of his ankle. Drops of blood oozed out. And instinctively, Lenny bent down and sucked the wound and spat out blood and venom. He did this a second time, a third, and then he drew back again and looked at the wound. A cold chill went up his spine. He said to himself, "The main thing I am not supposed to do is panic." He remembered that from when little Joe got a snake bite on the Ponderosa, but he knew he already had panicked. Just the sight of those two holes in his ankle had caused his heart to pound like a hammer. Blood rushed through his body with the force of Niagara Falls. His throat had tightened up. Suddenly he couldn't see because tears were in his eyes. It seemed to Lenny, then, that this was the secret of life, the thing man had always been afraid of. Even when man thought he was afraid of the Russians or the atom bomb or some new virus, what he really feared was that he would wind up bitten by a snake, two holes in his ankle. Lenny tried to see the wound through his tears. It was man's first fear, Lenny seemed to remember, way back in the Bible. And the Bible knew how to scare a person. Lenny almost felt that this was the same snake. It had slithered down the tree in the Garden of Eden, tempted Adam, wound through deserts, round pyramids, stowed away on a banana boat, come to the United States, crossed ditches and parks and burning asphalt roads, and come here to wait for Lenny beneath the stone house. Lenny blinked, and the two holes came into focus again.
"I gotta get out of here,"
Lenny said. Then, using the same side-to-side motions the snake had used going behind the oil drum, Lenny pulled himself out of the shadow of the crawl space. He slid into the sunlight. He sat up. And there, in the dappled sunlight, beneath trees that were solid gold, Lenny rolled up his pants legs and took off his shoe. He stripped off the stained sock. He looked again at the two small holes in the pale flesh of his ankle. Chapter 11. Lenny's ankle was bleeding freely now. The blood was streaming down his foot, dropping onto the dry, dusty earth. The pain had increased. Lenny hunched over his foot. This sharp, stinging pain made him even more afraid. His heart started beating harder. His mouth got drier. He kept saying over and over, "I gotta keep calm. I gotta keep calm." But this seemed only to make him more frightened. He reached into his back pocket for a knife. It was there tangled in some string and a red bandana. When he had got it loose, he tried to open it one-handed, as he always did, but his fingers were trembling too much. Fumbling, using both hands, he got the knife open. Then it dropped in the dust. In a panic now, Lenny wiped the dusty knife blade off on his pants. He knew what to do, but he hesitated a moment. He felt physically sick now. Then he bent quickly and cut little X's over both the fang marks. He moaned. For the first time in his life, he wanted to be in a hospital among people who knew what they were doing. Doctors and nurses had always frightened Lenny before, but now in his mind they took on the beauty of painted pictures. He took three deep breaths. Then he bent down and began to draw out the blood. He spat it into the dust. Suddenly he thought of a tourniquet, and he wrapped the bandana around his leg and tied it tight. He sucked hard at the snake bite, drawing a mouthful of blood. He spat it out. His ankle really hurt now. It was a burning pain, sharp and stinging, as if his leg was being slashed by razor blades. The telephone, Lenny thought. He got up and, hobbling on one foot, made his way round the house and up the steps. The key was gone, but Lenny went straight to the window by the sofa and pulled it up. Lucky that he had known about that latch being broken. Carefully, he swung his leg over the sill. The telephone was on the far wall, and Lenny kept his eyes on it as he struggled across the room. Rainbow-like, it seemed to get farther and farther away. Lenny held on to one piece of furniture after another, the overstuffed chair, the end table, the floor lamp. He had once thought this furniture must have come from at least 20 different people.
"Well, I can get along without this chair, I reckon," someone had said.
"I got no more use for this table. I was gonna give this rug to the Sunday school, but if you can use it..."
Lenny had liked that. At the time, he had thought that if he ever had a house, that's the way he would have wanted to furnish it. One piece of furniture from everybody he liked. With a swimming motion, weaving through the furniture, he got to the phone at last. He lifted the receiver. Silence. He jiggled the piece up and down. Silence. He dialed O. Silence. As he stood there on one foot, he seemed to get smaller in size. The phone had been disconnected for the winter. Slowly, Lenny let himself down into the first chair he came to. It was the brown overstuffed chair, and he sank as slowly as an old rheumatic man. He didn't think he would ever get up again. He lifted his leg as gently as he could and rested it on the green plastic footstool. His ankle was turning purple. He had so wanted to hear the voice of the operator saying,
"Number, please."
He had so wanted to reply, "Get me the Fairyland Motel." He laid his head back against the chair. There was a picture hanging on the opposite wall. Lenny had never noticed it before. He would not have noticed it now except that the sunlight from the window was falling on it, lighting it up as if it were in a museum. The picture was a barnyard scene, painted by someone who had never been in a barnyard. No pigs were that pink. No rooster was that red. No cow went around with four golden straws in the side of her mouth. Tears came to Lenny's eyes. They spilled over onto his cheeks and rolled down his face. He caught the first one with his tongue. He tasted the salt. Then he gave up and let the tears flow. It would take a miracle to save him now, he thought. He couldn't walk. Any movement at all was terribly painful. The police wouldn't come back. No one knew where he was. He needed a real miracle. A twitch from Samantha's nose, or a visit from the Flying Nun, or a nod from Jeannie. He had always loved those shows. When things went wrong, when Darren got changed into an elephant, Samantha would just twitch her nose and make him a man again. When Jeannie's master was accidentally sent into space instead of a rhesus monkey, Jeannie would nod him back again. That kind of magic was what he needed. Slowly he reached down, loosened the tourniquet, let the blood flow back into his leg for a moment. Then he tightened it again. Suddenly, he thought of his mother. He knew how sad she would look when she found out.
All the trouble he had caused her, all the vaccinations and school lessons and tooth fillings. She had even signed him up for safety lessons one summer at a municipal pool. She had taken him with her through 7 states. And all for what? To have him sink down into an overstuffed chair and die. Wincing with pain, Lenny got to his feet. Outside, the sun went behind a cloud and it got dark in the room. For a moment, Lenny was terrified. He thought the end had come. He began to shuffle across the room. In a panic, he grabbed the sofa, and as he reached for the table, the sun came out again. The room got bright. By accident, as he leant there, he saw his face in the mirror by the front door. It scared him. He looked as wild as a man marooned 20 years on a desert island. Lenny swallowed. He took a deep breath. Then slowly, his shoulders hunched forward, his chest heaving with unspent sobs, he started for the door. Chapter 12. Lenny struggled out onto the front porch. Every step killed him. He could not even touch his wounded leg now. He moved so slowly and carefully it almost seemed that he was not moving at all. Inch by inch he made it across the warped floorboards and caught the porch railing. He hung there for a moment, bent forward, staring down into the ferns below. He raised his head then and looked across the lake. The sun was lower in the sky. Could it already be setting? How much time had passed, Lenny wondered. The lake was shining with the red sun and the reflection of the beech trees. Probably not more than a half hour since he had first felt that piercing sting on his ankle. The redness of the lake seemed like a bad omen to him, a prediction of terrible things to come. It was like a prophecy. When the waters of the earth turn red. Someone he knew had believed in omens. Who was it? His grandmother Madison, probably. When the caterpillars were thick, a bad winter was coming. When an owl cried in the night, somebody was going to die. What would she say about this? When the waters of the earth turn red. Or maybe it was his grandfather Madison. No, his grandfather Madison had been an old man who ran motels, and in his spare time worked at making concrete figures to adorn them. The thing his grandfather Madison believed in was not complaining. One time when Lenny had broken his arm and was crying because the cast itched, his grandfather Madison had told him that there was an old legend that said birds were created without wings. When their wings were put on their bodies, as a punishment, the birds complained, but as soon as they stopped complaining, the wings grew to their bodies and lifted them into the air. Lenny had been so puzzled about what this had to do with the cast on his arm that he had stopped crying at once. He still didn't understand it. Lenny's leg jerked again. The pain was so sharp and sudden that Lenny threw back his head like an animal. He felt like howling, but instead he yelled, "Does anybody hear me?" He waited, listening to the silence, and then tried again.
"Will somebody please help me?"
Pause.
"I'm over here at the stone house."
Nobody answered, and the silence frightened Lenny. It was a total silence. He couldn't even hear any birds or crickets. The leaves had stopped turning in the trees. It was as if he really were the last person on earth. Even Friend couldn't help him. Remember, Friend had surrendered to the police. In a flash, a picture came to Lenny of Friend sitting in a cell at the station, his batteries gradually getting weaker.
"Don't forget, kids, to keep spare batteries handy, so you'll never be without a friend."
By the time the police got around to questioning him, his voice would be too faint to hear.
"Speak up, son. Tell us your name in a good loud voice." "I said for you to speak up. If you don't, we're going to have to take some action."
The silence continued. Even the water no longer lapped at the shore. Lenny glanced down at his leg. It was swelling now, the skin tight and shiny, and as hot as if it were on fire. His leg twitched again, frog-like, and the pain almost made him faint. His strength was leaving him rapidly. He was so weak now that he had to sit down or he would collapse. Moving his leg as little as possible, Lenny eased himself down on the top step. With a sigh, he reclined against the porch railing. After a moment, even weaker, he let himself lie on the porch. He sagged. All his strength was gone. His leg felt like a sausage in a frying pan. He looked up at the porch ceiling. Rain had seeped through the tar and shingles of the roof and stained the boards. Lenny saw it all in a kind of blur because he had started crying again. All of a sudden, Lenny found himself remembering a poem. Lenny only knew one poem. He had had to learn it for a school assignment.
"If everyone else can memorize a poem, you can too, Lenny,"
his teacher had said.
"But why can't I substitute a TV jingle? They're poems. They rhyme."
"No, Lenny."
"But listen to this. Why isn't this a poem?" Hold the pickle, hold the lettuce. Special orders don't upset us. All we ask is that you let us serve you.
No, Lenny, that's not poetry.
Well, here's another one. What's wrong with this? Hot dogs, armor hot dogs. What kind of kids like armor hot dogs? Fat kids, skinny kids, kids...
Lenny, for the last time, you are to learn a poem. Advertising jingles are not poetry.
Lenny could no longer remember the teacher's name. He had had 23 different teachers in all that year, but he could still remember his poem and how bright the sun had been, slanting into the room as he said it. It was as if the audience were lit up for the occasion instead of the stage.
The July sun is gone. The August moon. September's stars are dim. October's bright noon.
I am curious,
the teacher had said when he had finished.
Why did you select that particular poem, Lenny?
He had selected it because all the months of the year were in it, and that would make it easier to memorize. He already knew the months.
It just appealed to me,
he had said.
Why, Lenny?
I don't know.
What do you think the poet had in mind when he wrote the poem?
The teacher, interested in Lenny for the first time, crossed in front of her desk.
Let me think.
Lenny had put his hand to his chin at this point to give the impression of deep thought. Lenny had always had a hard time arranging his face in the right expression. Looking interested or studious was especially hard for him. He sometimes thought he needed acting lessons on being a person.
Do you think he was just talking about 1 year passing?
The teacher went on.
Or do you think, Lenny, that the poet was seeing his whole life as a year, that he was seeing his whole life slipping past?
I'm not sure.
Lenny's hand was still on his chin, as if ready to stroke a long gray beard.
Class?
His whole life slipping past, the class chorused together. They had had this teacher so long that they could tell, just from the way she asked a question, what they were supposed to answer.
I was just getting ready to say that,
Lenny mumbled into his hand. And now, 2 years too late, Lenny knew what they were talking about. The poet had meant his whole life. Lenny knew because he saw his whole life slipping away, too, in exactly the same way. July's sun, August's moon, September's stars, October's noon. He closed his eyes, and the tears came again, hot and fast. He couldn't remember the rest of the poem. What was it he would miss about November and December? He squeezed his eyes shut tighter in determination. He stuck out his jaw. Then his body went slack. He sighed. He realized that he would miss everything about the world. He would miss all the reruns of Bonanza and Star Trek. He would miss shows that hadn't even come on the air, midwinter replacements he didn't even know about. He would miss shows that hadn't even been thought of yet. He would miss his mother. Lenny sighed again, and his mother would miss him. That was the worst thought. To get his mind off it, he tried to think of something he had seen on TV. All the programs were a blur. He couldn't even remember what dangers Mannix had faced last week, or Columbo, and Kojak had been in real trouble. What was it? He groaned, feeling again the pain of separation from his mother. All Lenny's life, his own feelings had been as hard to get to as the meat in a walnut. His feelings were there, Lenny was sure of that, somewhere inside the hull, probably just as perfectly formed as the rest of the things nature put in a shell. Lenny remembered that one March morning, he and his mom had been burning trash behind the motel. His mom had said,
"Why, Lenny, look at this."
Lenny had come over to where his mom was standing by some bushes.
"What is it?" "It's an old cocoon. We'll take it in and cut it open, and you can see where a butterfly grew."
His mom had broken off the twig, and, forgetting the trash fire, had gone into the motel. She had taken her onion knife and sawed through the cocoon.
"There,"
she had said. For a moment, Lenny and his mom had stared at the cut-open cocoon in silence. Then his mom had said in a sad voice,
"Oh, dear, it wasn't empty. I cut through a butterfly."
Lenny had stared silently at the two halves, the pale, wet center.
"It was the first cocoon I ever saw. I'm sorry, Lenny."
He could see that it really bothered her, and he'd said,
"That's all right. I just didn't know."
Lenny felt that his own feelings had suddenly been laid bare in the same way. Now that it was too late, he found that he broke off. He had just remembered the last part of the poem.
"And November's morn, white with frost, and December's snows are melted and lost."
Anyway, it was something like that. Chapter 13. Trying to remember the lines of the poem had helped Lenny forget his pain for a moment. It seemed to him then that if you knew enough poems to say to yourself, you could get through anything. He tried to think of something else to divert him. He went back to TV. TV jingles, maybe. I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. I'd like to hold it in my hands and keep it company. It's the real thing, Coke is. Oh, Lenny moaned. They weren't as good as poetry. Quaker State your car to keep it running young. Maybe they were too easy to remember. Oh, log cabin makes it thicker, as thick as anyone can. On your pancakes or... Abruptly, his leg jerked, and he couldn't think of anything but the pain. He raised up and looked at his leg. Grimacing with the pain, he looked down the slope to the willow trees. He could see the edge of his boat through the trees. He took a deep breath. Double your pleasure, double your fun. With double... It wouldn't work. He looked again at his boat. He thought, maybe if I can reach the boat, I can float across the lake. Then maybe I can crawl real slowly through the field. Then maybe I can... He saw it as if it were happening on television. It seemed possible. He leant up on one elbow. He hesitated, struggling with himself. Lassie would make it, he told himself. A rattlesnake bite wouldn't stop Lassie. A shark bite wouldn't stop Flipper. Gentle Ben would drag a bear trap for 100 miles to save himself. Lenny took a deep breath and tried to push himself into a sitting position. He fell back on his elbow. He tried again. He couldn't make it. He was very weak now. But he wanted desperately to be in his boat floating towards home. He could almost feel himself floating over the gentle waves. He tried to push himself up again. He failed. He laid back on the porch. The silence around him was awful now. It wasn't only the silence that bothered Lenny. It was the terrible feeling that everything had stopped moving. The sun wasn't dropping in the sky. It was still hanging in the sky in exactly the same place. The wind wasn't blowing. The clouds weren't moving. The trees were still as plastic arrangements. He closed his eyes. He had lost track of time. He didn't know how long he had been lying here. It seemed like days, years, centuries. He felt as if he had been lying here long enough to have been frozen in a glacier or petrified by burning lava. He had been lying here long enough to be preserved and sent to some museum as the main display. He would be more popular in the museum than the mummy or the fossilized whale.
Hey, did you guys see the preserved kid? No, where's any preserved kid? Around yonder. He's 10 million years old. The card says so, and he's got a snake bite in his ankle. You can even see the holes. Where? Show me. Come on, if you don't believe me.
He would be so popular that they would make a whole educational TV program about him, Lenny thought. They would reconstruct his life, his last day. The show would be called This Is the Way We Think It Was, and as the young actor lay stretched out, imitating Lenny's pain, imitating Lenny's dying, the announcer's voice would say,
Yes, this is the way we think it was 10 million years ago today.
Lenny raised his head. The only bit of movement left in the world was his pounding heart, and now even that seemed to be slowly winding down. Lenny stretched out flat on the porch. His mind drifted back in time. He thought of a friend he had had in Nashville. Nashville was the only place he and his mom had stayed long enough for Lenny to get a good friend. The other places they had lived, by the time Lenny got people used to him and to stop picking on him, right then he and his mom had moved. This friend in Nashville was Carl Lee Norton, and he and Lenny used to walk home from school together through an old cow field. They both lived in side-by-side trailers in Pineview Trailer Court. And sometimes when they got tired, they would lie down in the field and just look up at the sky. One day, as they were lying there in silence, an airplane flew overhead. A small plane, white and red, single engine. Lenny, watching the plane, began to will it to fall from the sky.
Fall, fall, fall,
he was saying to himself, not really wanting the plane to fall, just testing his ability to make things happen. At that very moment, as Lenny lay there with his brain powers trained on the airplane, Carl Lee sat up and said,
Hey, I bet that's my uncle.
Where?
Up there in that airplane. You know, Uncle David? It looks like his Cessna.
Oh. Lenny lay back and closed his eyes. He felt weak. He realized he had been willing one of his most admired people, Carl Lee's Uncle David, the man who had let Lenny sit in the cockpit of his glider and promised to take him up in an airplane, this was the man he had been willing to fall from the sky.
I gotta go home,
he said after a moment when he felt he could stand. He got up slowly. The plane was out of sight. Still flying, he hoped.
Me too,
Carl Lee said, and the two of them walked towards their trailers with the matching plastic sofas and the plastic sliding doors and the carpets of miracle fibers. As he entered his trailer, Carl Lee called,
"I'll ask Uncle David if we can go up in his Cessna this Sunday."
Lenny nodded, but he wasn't so eager to go up anymore. Going up in the airplane was ruined now, because maybe, just maybe, there would be some other person in some other field looking up at the sky and saying, "Fall, fall, fall," to Lenny's plane. Sure, he, Lenny, didn't have any power, but maybe somebody else did. But now, lying on the porch, dying, he sent out a mental signal to the world.
"Come, come, come."
Silently, he willed the invisible people with all his might.
"Anyone within range of my mind, come. Help me. Help."
His leg jerked again, and he cried out. He put his fists up to his eyes.
"You have to keep hold of yourself,"
his mom had told him once. It was just after her boyfriend, Sam, had died. Lenny had been sad, too. Sam was his favorite of his mother's boyfriends. Sam had owned a diner and was so big and strong he flattened hamburgers like he was swatting flies. He was always saying,
"Hit me, kid. Go ahead and hit me as hard as you can."
Lenny would hit and hit until his arms got tired, but it was like trying to hurt a mattress. Lenny liked it when he couldn't hurt Sam. It was nice to know that there was one person in the world who could not be hurt no matter what you did. And then Sam had died. He died right at the diner while he was shoveling snow off the parking lot. His heart, it turned out, was not as strong as his body. Lenny had sat in the last booth with his mom while she warmed her hands around a cup of coffee.
"You always have to keep hold of yourself," she said.
Lenny had a young-looking mother. People were always mistaking her for his sister. Now, for the first time, she looked old enough, really, to be his mother. She wrapped her arms around herself.
"Never let go, Lenny."
"I try not to."
"No matter what happens."
"Will we have to leave the diner?" She nodded.
"But where will we go?" "I don't know, but if we just keep hold of ourselves, we'll be all right. I'll try to."
Now, as if to keep his word, Lenny hugged himself. One arm was on each shoulder, but his fingers were like icy claws. There was no comfort. He wished for dream arms that would grow long on command and wrap him like soft, fleshy hoses. Holding himself tighter, he sent out the message again.
"Somebody. Anybody. Come."
Chapter 14. A sound broke through the stillness of the front porch. Lenny couldn't place the noise at first, but he waited. He held his breath and listened. Maybe the sound hadn't been real, he thought. It was puzzling. It was like the time his mother had taken him to the wax museum in New Orleans. The wax museum had been a substitute treat because they hadn't been able to find Midget City. "All right," his mother had said finally. "We'll just go to the wax museum. You want to see wax people, don't you?" They had gone in. And Lenny had been really surprised at how real the people looked. Lenny could see the pores in their hands. Their eyes looked right at him. Still in all, there had been something wrong. Something so wrong that Lenny couldn't really be scared, no matter how hard he tried, not even in the Chamber of Horrors. It just wasn't real somehow. That was the same feeling Lenny had now, as he lay on the porch, thinking back on the sound he had heard. He listened. Now he couldn't hear anything at all. It seemed to him that maybe the sound had been a car door slamming, but he wasn't sure. Maybe it was just because that was what he wanted it to be. He tried to pull himself up on his elbow.
"Help me,"
he called out.
"Is anybody there?"
He waited.
"I'm here on the porch. I'm dying."
His hopes went up and down like a pop fly. He sank back to the porch. He didn't have the strength to hold his head up anymore. He called again, but his voice seemed to be no more than a sigh.
"Somebody help me,"
he begged. For a moment, his hopes were all mixed up with the wax figures in New Orleans, and he imagined that Napoleon and Huey Long and Flip Wilson were drawing around him. Abruptly, he turned his head from side to side as if to clear it of a bad dream. He wet his lips. He murmured,
"No,"
to the wax figures.
"No."
Then he grew still. He had heard another sound.
It was real. Someone had spoken to him.
"Son."
Lenny's eyes snapped open. He tried to rise up again. The big, sagging cop was standing at the bottom of the steps, tall as a tree. Lenny blinked. He saw the policeman clearly now. Lenny drew in a breath of air. His heart rested a moment. He said,
"Help me."
"Sure, son. What happened to your leg?"
"Snake bite."
"What kind of snake, son, do you know?"
"Rattler."
Saying the word made him shiver. His leg jerked again, and he cried out. The big cop straightened.
"Hey, Bert," he called. "Get the hospital on the double."
"My leg's on fire,"
Lenny moaned.
"Tell them a kid's been bitten by a rattlesnake,"
he yelled.
"We're bringing him in. Then get over here and help me."
"My mom,"
Lenny began.
"Yeah, son. Who is your mom?"
"She runs the Fairyland Motel."
"We'll get your mom. Now you just lie quiet. When did it happen, son? Can you tell me?"
"It was right after you drove off the second time."
"We knew you were there. We saw your wet footprints on the front porch."
Lenny nodded. The boat leaked. His sneakers were wet. He had left his footprints. His leg twitched again, and the hot pain shot through his whole body. He began to cry.
"Don't cry, son. We're gonna get you to the hospital. Won't take us 5 minutes."
"I can't help crying."
"I know. A buddy of mine got bitten by a snake. We were on a picnic down at Wandover Falls, and my buddy was reaching in the grass for a baseball, and the snake caught him on his little finger right there by the nail. Well, my buddy cried, too, and he was a grown man, 40 years old.
Lenny groaned.
"Give me a hand here, Bert," the big cop said. "I'll steady his leg."
They got Lenny into lifting position.
"Here we go."
Lenny cried out as they picked him up. His leg couldn't stand the slightest touch now, and then he felt himself being rushed to the car.
"Can you get the door?"
the big cop asked.
"Yeah."
As they struggled with the door, Lenny stared up through the golden leaves of the trees. He saw a moon in the late afternoon sky. It was white. A children's moon, they called it, when it came out like that in the daytime. Lenny's grandfather had told him so. There was a story connected with it, but Lenny didn't feel like remembering it. He moaned as they slid him into the back seat.
"Now, you just stretch out there and try to relax. You all right?"
"I don't know,"
Lenny groaned.
"I'll stay back here with you,"
the big cop said.
"Bert, you drive."
He crawled in and sat on the edge of the seat. He said,
"I wish we'd found you the first time we came by. Then this wouldn't have happened."
"I do too,"
Lenny said.
"Where were you?"
"Under the house."
Lenny turned his head away.
"I didn't know snakes stayed under houses."
"I reckon they do."
The car started.
"Here we go,"
the big cop said. Chapter 15. Lenny glanced out of the car window, and he got one last look at the stone house. It was just a gray and brown blur now. It had nothing to do with him. It wasn't his house. No more than a theater he had watched a movie in was his theater, or a cafe he had had a meal in was his cafe. It was strange the way objects could be valuable one moment and worthless the next. It was the way colored Easter eggs seem like real gold when you're on a hunt, running through the grass with an empty basket swinging at your side, and then the next day, one of those same colored eggs can be just a cracked, smelly object.
"How you doing, son?"
the big cop asked. Lenny closed his eyes as if to shut out the question.
"I don't know."
"You just hang on there."
"That's what I'm trying to do."
Lenny wet his dry lips. Without opening his eyes, he said,
What happened to your friend that got bitten by a rattlesnake? Did he die?"
"Nah, he didn't die. That was old Hank Thompson. Bert, you remember him. Big fella. He used to coach Little League. He missed 2 weeks of work, as I recall it, and he never has stuck his hand down in deep grass again."
"I'll never crawl under another house,"
Lenny said, moaning a little as they went over a bump.
"They used to tease him about it. Get the ball, Hank, they'd call. It's right over there in the grass."
He smiled.
"Hank would back up a mile to keep from touching a clump of grass. He'd always say, 'One rattlesnake bite'll do me for the rest of my life."
"That's true,"
Lenny moaned. As they got to the highway, the siren started up. It sounded different, Lenny thought, when it was you inside the car, when it was you that the trucks and cars were going to pull over to the side of the road for. He tried to raise his head and see if it was happening. He was too weak.
"You all right, son?"
Lenny opened his eyes. He looked at the big cop. He nodded.
"Well, just hold on."
Lenny kept looking at the big cop's face. Suddenly he thought of the time his mom had taken him down the street in Nashville to see a man who was buried alive. The man was buried in a special box, and there was a green awning over it. For a dime, you could look down a tube and speak to the man who was buried below. Lenny would never forget looking down the tube. He had had a million questions he wanted to ask, but as soon as he saw the man's face below him, he couldn't say a word.
"Ask him how long he's going to stay down there," his mother prompted. "How long are you going to stay down there?"
As long as the people of Nashville want me to,
the man had answered.
Ask him how he eats. How do you eat?
But the woman taking up the dimes had said,
Move on now. These girls want to see too.
And Lenny had to move on and make room for three girls, who were already arguing over who would have to look first. Lenny had moved on, but it had left him with a funny sensation, looking at a stranger through a tube like that. Because, for a moment, the stranger's face had blotted out the whole world. It had just been the stranger and Lenny. Lenny had thought everyone should have to look at everybody at least once through a tube. He could see them so much clearer. Now Lenny could see the big cop in the same clear one-to-one way. Lenny said,
Tell me about your friend some more. Your friend that got bitten.
Well, let's see. He lost his fingernail, I remember that.
What did they do to him at the hospital?
Well, they gave him some shots, as I recall it, and something to take away the pain. He was real happy to be in hospital.
He broke off.
Pull in here, Bert. This is the emergency entrance.
The big cop turned back to Lenny.
We'll get you inside, and you'll be fine.
In Lenny's mind, the big cop suddenly got mixed up with Sam. Maybe it was because they were both so big. Lenny half expected the big cop to turn around and say, Hit me in the stomach, kid. Lenny put out his hand and held tightly to the cop's sleeve.
I want you to carry me, not him.
All right.
Bert opened the door. Awkwardly, the big cop climbed out and reached back to help Lenny.
Let's go.
Chapter 16.
Anti-venom test was negative, a voice was saying.
Lenny was lying with his eyes closed. He was sobbing to himself. He opened his eyes once to see if the big cop was still standing in the doorway. The big cop lifted his hand and said to Lenny,
Your mom will be here in a minute. Bert's gone to get her.
Lenny turned away. He closed his eyes. His body shook with sobs.
Just hold on,
the cop called. Lenny felt himself being given shots all over his body. It was just another pain. Then they were making slits in his leg. And just when he thought it was all over, he got two more shots, one in the ankle and one in the thigh, then two more in the hip. He lost count. Somebody said,
We gave you something to ease the pain. You should be feeling some relief soon.
They rolled him out of the emergency room, down the green hall, and into the elevator.
I'll stay with you till your mom gets here,
the cop said. Lenny nodded. He reached out and took the cop's hand. He was beginning to relax a little now.
The doctors say you're gonna be just fine.
I don't know,
Lenny murmured. Two people lifted him onto a bed. Lenny reached out for the cop's hand again. He ran his free hand over the sheet like a small child comforting himself with a favorite blanket. He felt sleepy.
Here's your mom,
the big cop said. She was standing in the doorway in blue jeans and a tie-dyed shirt. She came over to the bed and started to cry. Lenny said,
I'm sorry.
You don't have anything to be sorry about, she said. You just get well.
I shouldn't have tried to hide.
His lips were dry. It was getting hard to talk.
Don't say anything. You just rest and concentrate on getting well. You are very important to me.
His mom kept patting his arm. His mom used to play the piano long ago, but she had been taught by an aunt who could only play hymn chords, and now she was patting him with all her fingers, the same chord over and over. Lenny felt confused. He said,
Am I still in the hospital?
The room was blurring. The green walls were moving closer. His mom said,
Now you just keep hold of yourself.
She kept patting his arm, the same cord. Lenny thought of his arms rising and winding round his body like ropes. He ran his fingers back and forth on the sheet.
Try to sleep.
I gotta tell you something first,
Lenny began through his dry lips, but before he had a chance to speak, he had forgotten what he wanted to say.
No, don't talk. I understand.
Lenny sighed. It was easier, if she really did understand, not to have to tell it, whatever it was. He couldn't remember.
What time is it?
He asked.
4:30.
When was I bitten?
Well, they said it must have been about an hour and a half ago. You were lucky to get help that fast.
I know.
Now you just lie back and rest. Get well. That's all that matters. Want me to close the blinds?
Lenny opened his eyes and saw the sun. It looked like it was setting. It didn't seem possible. He couldn't remember what day it was. Maybe he thought this was the longest day on record. They would put it in a book. The longest day ever recorded was on an afternoon in early October, the day a boy was bitten by a rattlesnake under a stone house at a lake. His mother got up and closed the blinds.
There, is that better?
I can still smell the lake.
No, hon, the whole hospital's air-conditioned, she said. The window's shut tight.
I can smell it, Mom, I tell you. I can smell it. Don't you believe me?
Yes, yes, his mother said, playing three quick chords on his arm. Don't get upset, Lenny. Just lie there and try to sleep. I think I can smell the lake, too.
Lenny remembered suddenly what he had wanted to tell her.
I failed my science test,
he said.
It's under my socks.
That's all right.
You have to sign it.
I will.
It's the science test you thought I was studying for so hard.
That's all right.
It's the science test you said you were proud of me for passing.
It's all right.
It doesn't matter to you?
No.
Comforted, Lenny sighed. His mother kept patting his arm, and in a few minutes, he slept. Chapter 17.
He'll be all right, ma'am. They've made a lot of progress in snakebite treatment.
It was the big cop talking to Lenny's mother. Lenny heard him, but he didn't open his eyes for a moment. The pain was back now, as bad as before.
I hope, his mom said.
Folks who talk about the world going to the dogs forget all the progress we've made.
I know, his mom said.
Why, I read the other day that there's McDonald hamburger places in Japan now, and shopping centers in India.
We all have a lot to be thankful for.
And your boy's gonna be just fine. Living in modern times has its advantages, and one of them is that your boy's gonna be all right.
Mom,
Lenny said through dry lips.
I'm right here, Lenny.
He could feel her leaning over him. He could smell her clean, lemony smell.
What time is it?
It's...
She paused and looked at her watch.
It's 11:40.
At night?
Yes.
Lenny moaned. He hadn't known pain could be this bad. The worst pain he had suffered before today was the digging out of a splinter at Sam's Diner and the setting of a broken arm in Nashville. This was total, all-out pain.
I don't think I'm gonna get through the night,
he said, more to himself than to his mom.
Yes, you will, Lenny. It'll get better. Just hold on to yourself.
Can't they give me something for the pain?
They already have, hon.
Are you sure?
They've given you all they can. It'll ease up soon.
I know it won't.
He began to cry.
Pain like this doesn't ease.
It will.
He lay with his eyes closed for a moment, tears rolling down his cheeks. Then he said,
What time is it?
It's, she paused, 11:41.
He lay without moving. He was trying to last just 5 more minutes. He could no longer think of getting through the whole night. 5 more minutes was the best he could do.
What time is it now?
It's 11:42.
3 more minutes to go. The big cop, Lenny had forgotten he was in the room, said,
I'll go speak to the nurse. Maybe she can do something.
I'd appreciate it.
After the cop left the room, his mother said, You want to talk, Lenny? Maybe it would help you to get your mind off the pain.
I'll try.
Want me to tell you about the time I was in hospital? I was just about your age.
All right.
It was an accident.
Car?
No, I was climbing a tree behind the motel.
Our motel?
No, this was a different one. It was in Kentucky, and it was called the Cozy K. We lived in one of the cabins. Cozy K Cabins was the full name. Anyway, I was out climbing an old oak tree, and I fell. I landed in the crook of the tree on my knee, and then I fell on the ground and broke my arm. And they took me to the hospital in the back of an old pickup truck. I can still remember how scared I was because I had never even spent a night away from home.
Lenny said. He paused, wet his lips.
What time is it now?
It's...
Pause.
11:44.
1 more minute to go, Lenny thought.
You want to hear the rest about my arm?
Yeah, go on.
Well, the knee wasn't too bad, but the arm got infected. See, the bone had poked through the skin, and they thought I was gonna die, Lenny. I was in the hospital for 2.5 weeks. It almost caused me to fail 5th grade.
She broke off as the cop came back into the room.
The nurse will be in a minute,
he said.
Did you hear that, Lenny? Hold on to yourself, because the nurse is coming.
What time is it now?
Lenny asked.
It's 11:46.
He had made it. 5 minutes, and he was already 1 minute into the next 5. His mom said,
Officer Olson was just telling me while you were asleep, Lenny, that a friend of his got bitten by a rattlesnake on his little finger.
I told him about it, ma'am.
And Lenny, he says he'll get the man to come and see you tomorrow if it'll make you feel better.
Lenny nodded. He waited as long as he could stand it, and then he said,
What time is it now?
Chapter 18. That was how Lenny got through that first night. 5 minutes, and then 5 minutes more. It seemed to Lenny that the whole night, separated into those 5-minute periods, was longer than the rest of his whole life. He would never have believed that 5 minutes could be longer than a year, but now he knew it was true. In the morning, when the doctor came in to look at Lenny's leg and to change the dressing, Lenny was past caring. He didn't even want to get well anymore.
How are you feeling?
The doctor asked. Lenny just shook his head.
Well, let's see that leg.
Lenny closed his eyes and moaned. His leg hurt so badly he could even feel the doctor's breath on his knee. It was like a blowtorch.
Don't get near my leg!
Lenny murmured as he fainted. He didn't remember anything else about the rest of the morning except that it was one terrible pain after another. In the afternoon, the big cop came in. He leant on the foot of the bed.
Remember me telling you about my friend that got bitten by a snake?
He said.
Well, here he is.
The cop sounded as cheerful as if he'd done a feat of magic. Lenny tried. He opened his eyes. He blinked to clear his vision. He made an effort to see the man beside his bed.
There's my finger that got bitten,
the man said, leaning over Lenny's bed.
See? You can see the scars, and here are the slits they had to make in my hand to relieve the swelling. Here, 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 and here, and my fingernail's gone.
He wagged his little finger.
See? No fingernail!
Lenny tried to focus his eyes on the finger and the slits, but he didn't care anymore. Nothing mattered. He closed his eyes.
He would be real glad to see you if he wasn't feeling so bad, his mother said.
Well, we'll come back, son. Don't worry about it. Tomorrow or the next day, I'll bring him back,
the cop said.
He'll feel more like looking at the finger then, his mom said.
She turned to Lenny.
And Lenny, did you see what Officer Olson brought you? It's a clock. Now you won't have to ask for the time so much. It's an electric clock, and you can read it as easy as a sign.
There was a silence while everyone waited for Lenny's reaction. Then his mother said, I'm sure he'd thank you if he was feeling better.
Why, that's all right. He don't have to thank me,
the cop said.
Well, I'm sure he would, if he could.
Lenny glanced at the clock. It was nice. Any other time, it would have pleased him. The numbers rolled into view on a special dial. The numbers said 3:45. Then slowly, 3:46 rolled into view.
Thank you for coming, his mom said.
Ma'am, I wouldn't have missed it,
the man said. He was still holding out his little finger like he was drinking tea.
I know what it's like to be bitten by a snake, believe you me.
Lenny didn't remember anything else about that afternoon, except that after supper, the doctor came in and changed the dressing and had to make some more slits in Lenny's leg.
I'm going to give you something for the pain, Lenny, but it's going to hurt. You're going to have to be a brave boy,
the doctor said.
He will be,
his mother said. Lenny was already crying. Just the mention of any more pain than he was suffering now was more than he could bear.
Now, Lenny, get a hold of yourself, please, honey,
his mother said. Then she turned to the doctor.
He's usually real brave about everything. The time he had his arm set, he never even moaned.
But bravery didn't seem important to Lenny now. Nothing was. He yelled and cried and hollered. He hit at the doctor until the nurse had to hold his hands. He cursed. He screamed. He sobbed as if he would never stop.
Now it's all over, the doctor said. That wasn't so bad, was it?
His mother was coming back in the room.
See, hon, it's all over. Things will be better now. I'm just real sure things will be better.
The nurse will give you something to help you sleep now, the doctor said. In the morning, you should be feeling better.
The only thing Lenny remembered about the next morning was that he saw his leg for the first time. It scared him so much that for a moment, even the pain stopped. His leg no longer even resembled a leg. It was a huge, swollen object, shiny as glass.
Oh, no,
he moaned. From his thigh to his toes, his leg was twice as big as normal, and it was every color in the rainbow. Lenny fell weakly back on his pillow.
I told you not to look,
the nurse said.
Now you lie back and relax.
Where's my mom?
Lenny asked weakly.
She stepped out into the hall for a minute.
I want my mom.
The sight of his leg had made him weak and sick and scared.
Mom!
She'll be back in just a minute, soon as the doctor gets through. Your mom just felt a little dizzy and needed some air.
Oh.
The nurse pushed him back against his pillow. Lenny knew that the sight of his leg had been too much for his mother, too. He remembered she went out into the hall every time it was uncovered.
It's beginning to look better,
the doctor said.
Not to me,
Lenny moaned.
I never want to see my leg again.
But to everyone else, the leg was a fascinating sight. That was what Lenny remembered most about the next 2 days, showing his leg. Nurses from other floors, doctors, patients who were allowed to walk about, visitors all came in to have a look at Lenny's leg.
Haven't they ever seen a leg before?
He kept asking the nurse.
Not like that one,
she said.
You couldn't get any more color on that leg with a paintbrush.
Will it ever go away?
Oh, sure.
When?
Oh, by next week, probably.
Next week?
Lenny moaned. It seemed a lifetime. Turning his head to the window, he began to weep. Chapter 19. It was Friday before Lenny felt he really wanted to live. That happened about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Lenny's mom had rented a TV set for him to watch, and she had just rolled up the head of his bed so he could see. A rerun of Bonanza was on. And as Lenny lay there watching Haas win a Chinese girl in a poker game, he suddenly felt hungry. The hunger surprised him for a moment. Up until now, he hadn't wanted a thing to eat. They had had to feed him through a tube in his arm. He said,
Mom, I'm hungry.
His mom was watching Haas, smiling because Haas had thought he was winning a horse named Ming Li. Now he was afraid to take the girl, Ming Li, back to the Ponderosa and show her to Pa. His mom turned her head to Lenny and got up at the same time.
I'll get you something to eat, she said quickly.
At the door she turned, still smiling, and said, The nurse will be so pleased. She has been trying to get jello and broth down you for days.
I know, Mom, but I don't want that stuff.
What do you feel like eating, then? I'll go out for something if the doctor says you can have it.
I want a hamburger.
Oh, Lenny, I don't think...
And a chocolate shake.
Well, I'll try, but I really don't...
And if they won't let me have that, then I'll take a pizza.
I'll try, Lenny.
He lay back down. He already knew he wasn't going to get the hamburger or the pizza. His mom was going to come back with jello and broth, but it didn't much matter. He felt hungry enough to eat anything. A commercial came on the screen. A little girl was swinging, and a solemn voice announced that the little girl had skinned her knee yesterday and was about to fall on the same knee today. Lenny looked at the girl's knee. There was a mark the size of a dime. He glanced down at his own huge, discolored leg. He thought that the people who made television commercials didn't know anything about real life. Not the way he, Lenny, did. It seemed to him suddenly that every TV person he had ever seen wasn't real. Not the girl in danger of skinning her knee again. Not the women who had just given up their soap for an experiment in white clothes. Not the man who had eaten enchiladas and gotten an acid stomach. Lenny went on, even including his favorites. Not Haas, who had just won a Chinese girl in a poker game. Not Lassie, who had rescued a colt from a burning barn. Not Gentle Ben, who didn't really kill the chickens. Not the Brady Bunch, who had to go on a talent show and sing a rock song to get money for their parents' anniversary gift. That wasn't life. It was close enough to fool you, Lenny thought, if you weren't careful. And yet those TV characters were as different as a wax figure is from a real person. Lenny imagined you had to come up against life hard to know what it was all about. He looked at the TV. He smiled slightly. On the screen, Haas was saying,
But dag burn it, Pa. How was I to know Ming Li was a girl?
Lenny watched Pa for a moment. Pa Cartwright was the kind of father that would make you think, if you had a father, that your father wasn't good enough. Or Lassie pulling a newborn colt from the burning barn made you think your dog wasn't good enough. Or Mother Nature-type forests ruined real forests for you, made them seem dirty and empty. Or the Waltons, or the Brady Bunch, made you think there was something wrong with your family, when really, Lenny thought, his own family, just him and his mom, was 100 times realer than the Bradys or the Waltons or the Cleavers or any other TV family you could name. Lenny shifted on his hospital bed. After his mother brought his supper, he thought, he would turn off the TV for a while and work on his report. It was the only thing that really interested him. His teacher, Miss Markham, had come to see him in the hospital and had suggested that he do a report on rattlesnakes and rattlesnake bites. She would, she had said, give him extra credit for it. It would make up for his last science test. He had wanted to start the report right away, but he hadn't felt like it. Now,
Suddenly, he did. Lenny looked at his clock. He decided he would work on his report during Let's Make a Deal. For a second, he had a feeling of betrayal. All those people in their farmer suits and banana costumes would be in place, waiting. Monty Hall would be coming down the aisle. A great cheer would go up, signs would wave, people would beg Monty to choose them, and Lenny would dial them all down to a small dot and start working on his report. And after that, he would betray the celebrities on Hollywood Squares, who were waiting with their funny answers. And after that, Lenny's mother came in with a tray. She was smiling.
"The nurse says no hamburgers or pizza today."
"What is it?"
"It's Jell-O and broth, but she says you can have something else tomorrow if you're feeling better."
"A hamburger."
"We'll see."
She sat by his bed, spooned up some broth, and fed it to him. She said,
"What happened to Hoss while I was gone?"
"I don't know,"
Lenny said.
"I was thinking."
"Oh?"
She fed him some more broth. She dabbed at his face with a napkin.
"What about?"
"My report."
The broth felt good and warm inside him.
"I'm going to work on it after supper."
"Now, the doctor says you shouldn't do anything you don't feel like doing."
He nodded, took another spoonful of broth.
"I feel like it,"
he said. Chapter 20. Lenny stood in front of the Fairyland Motel. He was beside the wishing well. One hand was on Humpty Dumpty's head. He leant forward and looked down at the painted water below. There were still 7 pennies and 1 nickel, but the mound wrapper was gone. Lenny eased himself down on the edge of the well. His grandfather had made this well, Lenny thought, and painted all the Fairyland figures. Lenny could remember how proud his grandfather had been. He glanced around. Now there were only 3 figures in good enough condition to be in front of the motel, one elf, Humpty Dumpty, and Hansel. But once the whole lawn had been covered. People had had their pictures taken as if it were Disneyland.
"Mom, get a shot of me with the dwarfs. Dad, take me with the Wicked Witch."
Lenny ran his hand over the rim of the well. It was odd how different things looked to him now. The motel was more a home to him now than any house he could imagine. Driving up to the door after he had left the hospital had made him understand why his mom was always singing songs about going home. It had given him such a peaceful feeling to go in his room and lie down on his own bed. Lenny straightened. He imagined that if he went back to the stone house by the lake, that would look different too. Maybe someday he would do that, go back the way other people returned to look at their old high schools or the places where they had been born. Using his crutches, Lenny got up and walked across the driveway. He passed the cold drink machine. Behind him, the red neon sign flashed on. Fairyland Motel, vacancy. Lenny's mother was watching him through the picture window of the office. She had just turned on the sign, and she came to the door.
"Lenny, are you all right?"
"I'm fine, Mom."
"Well, you're supposed to take it easy. The doctor said I could do anything I felt like doing,"
he called.
"Well, I want you to take it easy. You're a very lucky boy. Everyone at the hospital says so."
"I know.
Don't undo all the doctor's good work now and have a relapse."
"I won't."
A relapse was the last thing he wanted to have. By the time he got out of the hospital, he had been jabbed with needles and stuck with thermometers and had his blood pressure taken enough times to last him forever. A truck passed on the highway, building up speed for the hill ahead, and at the same time, a car turned in the motel driveway. Lenny glanced round. It was a policeman's car, and the big cop who had helped Lenny, Officer Olson, was behind the wheel. The car pulled up by Lenny.
"Well, how are things going today?"
the policeman asked.
"Lots better," said Lenny. "I'm still sore from all those shots, though."
"How many did you have? Did you ever find out?"
61. The nurse counted them for me from my chart.
"That's a lot. How's the leg?"
Lenny held it out.
"I can walk around on it now. I don't even use my crutches in the house."
"Well, that's fine. You'll be ready to go on that fishing trip with me before long. I haven't forgotten my promise."
Lenny nodded.
"Your mom around?"
"In the office."
The policeman parked his car in the slot for room 316 and got out. His jacket was open and his stomach hung over his belt. He stood for a moment, looking over the grounds.
"Grass could use a cutting,"
he said.
"That's my job," Lenny said. "I'll probably be back at it next week the way I'm going."
He nodded.
"You know, you folks got a nice place out here. Real peaceful."
Home-like,
Lenny said. The policeman went into the motel office, and Lenny hobbled across the walkway. He sat down in one of the plastic-webbed chairs. He stretched out his leg. He looked at the empty chair across from him. Suddenly, he thought of Friend.
Yes, with Friend, the doll that's as big and real as you are. You'll never be alone again.
He shifted in his chair. Only a few weeks ago, he recalled, Friend had seemed like a pretty good idea. The way toys like G.I. Joe's seem great when you see six kids playing with them on TV, laughing, having a wonderful time with about $100 worth of extra equipment and perfectly formed little hills and cliffs and sand dunes, you don't even realize that you'll be playing on the sidewalk, probably by yourself, with no extra equipment at all. Or the way games on TV seem so much fun because they're being played by one of those TV families that do nothing but laugh together. Why, if he had seen Friend advertised on TV, he would probably have set off for one himself. Television could make you believe anything. It was their business.
Only $10.98 in cash or money order for Friend. And remember, Friends also come in the multi-pack, which consists of three friends in assorted sizes and colors, so overnight you can become the most popular kid on your block.
Lenny would send off his money and wait. He would check the mailbox daily. He would come running in from school every day, gasping, "Anything for me?"
"Not yet, Lenny."
Then, when he couldn't stand it another moment, the box would come. He would tear it open, eager to have Friend as soon as possible, eager to get on with the good times, the picnics, the long walks down country lanes, the movies. He would lift the box top, fold back the tissue paper, and there would be Friend. Lenny would be too excited to notice anything. He would struggle with Friend, trying to get the arms and legs bent in the right position. He would get Friend on his feet. He would drag him outside. He would sit him in the other plastic-webbed chair. He would begin telling Friend a joke. A car would pass on the highway, and Lenny would imagine how he looked sitting there, laughing and joking with Friend, just like on the TV ads. Then, a little boy in the car would stick his head out of the window and cry,
"Hey, look! That kid's talking to a doll!"
Looking at the empty chair, Lenny smiled. Chapter 21. Lenny could hear the policeman and his mom talking. The policeman was saying,
"After I go home and change, I'm going to come back and cut the grass. The boy shouldn't be pushing the lawnmower till he's a lot stronger."
The policeman had come to visit Lenny every single day he was in the hospital. Some days he even came twice, his mom had told him.
"Did he say anything about me?"
Lenny had asked when he felt good enough to worry about being caught by the police.
"Nothing bad. Nothing about me going in all those houses?" "No. He's probably waiting till I get well." "No, he is a very nice man, Lenny, and he's taken a real interest in you. He and his wife never had any children, so you be nice to him." "I'll try. It was he who got your picture in the newspaper."
Lenny was grateful for that. It was the first time he had ever been in the newspaper, and he had had 29 get-well cards from people he had never even heard of. And every single person in his English class had written him a note. And the mayor of the city had sent him good wishes in a letter. A Mercury sedan turned into the motel driveway and stopped just in front of where Lenny was sitting. Lenny could hear the car radio. John Denver was singing about nature in Colorado. The man said,
"I'll check and see how much the rooms are."
And he got out of the car. There were two girls in the back seat fighting over a young love comic book. The older girl was saying,
"Mom, I have you know I bought this comic with my own babysitting money, and I don't have to share it with anybody if I don't want to."
"Mom,"
the smaller girl whined,
"I told her she could look at my Porky Pig, but who wants to look at Porky Pig? Anyway, you make me sick. Everything I get, you want. Mom, she copies every single thing I do."
"It's flattering to be copied,"
the mother said in a tired voice.
"Not by her."
"Now, Faye,
I mean it. You made me let her wear my good pink top, and look, she's got chocolate all over it. I hate her."
"Will you please stop, girls? You've been arguing all the way from Tuscaloosa. Look, over there's a wishing well. Go make a wish, why don't you? I think I've got some pennies."
They took their pennies and walked to the well. The little girl looked up at her sister and said,
"What are you going to wish for, Faye?"
"I'm not telling you."
"Why?"
"'Cause you'll wish for the exact same thing, that's why."
They stood at the wishing well for a moment. Lenny watched them. Then silently, they made their wishes and dropped their pennies into the well. The coins clanged faintly against the bottom of the well. The man came out of the office with a key.
"We're staying,"
he said.
"Drive down to room 302.
The policeman came out of the office right behind the man. He paused and said to Lenny,
"Well, I'm taking over your job for the evening."
"What's that?"
"Grass cutting."
"Oh."
"Probably this will be the last time it has to be cut before winter."
"Yeah."
He got in the patrol car and drove off.
Lenny continued to sit in his chair.
Hey, what's wrong with your leg?
Lenny glanced up. It was the smallest of the sisters. Oh, I got bitten by a rattlesnake. Lenny never said those words without a feeling of great importance coming over him. He could hardly wait to get back to school to give his full report.
You want to see it? Yes.
He pulled up his pants and showed his wounded leg. It was still colorful enough to startle.
See all those little slit marks?
He said.
Yes.
They had to cut those to keep my leg from bursting open like a sausage.
Oh!
The girl's eyes got a little bigger. Her tongue came out and touched her upper lip.
Hey, Faye!
She called, straightening.
He got bitten by a rattlesnake. Come look!
Lenny kept his pants leg raised so that he wouldn't have to do it twice. Faye bent forward. Then she turned away, one hand over her mouth.
Oh, I can't look. It must have been awful.
It was pretty bad.
I used to think I wanted to be a nurse, but every time I see something like that, I know I couldn't. Let me see again. If they hadn't made those slits in his leg,
the little sister said,
it would have burst open like a sausage. I hate snakes,
Faye said, shuddering a little as she sat in the chair next to Lenny.
I think they're the awfulest things. You ought to read my report,
Lenny said.
It's real interesting, even if I did write it myself.
There was a silence, and then the little sister said,
Hey, you want to look at my Porky Pig comic book? Yeah, I guess so. I'll go get it. It's in the car.
Faye was still looking at him. She said,
I never met anybody who got bitten by a rattlesnake before. I've only met one other person myself,
Lenny said.
I wish I had some film in my camera. I'd take your picture.
Oh, well, Lenny said. He leant back in his chair. He drew the evening air into his lungs. On the highway, a truck passed, building up speed for the hill ahead.
Here it is.
Lenny held out his hand for the Porky Pig comic book. He began to flip through the pages. He glanced up and said,
You know, in my report about the rattlesnake, I even tell how many shots I had to have.
How many?
The little sister asked. Lenny looked closely at the first page of the book. Porky Pig was having to take care of the neighbor's baby. Lenny glanced up.
61.
61!
He nodded. He bent back over the comic book. A very small bank robber had dressed up in baby clothes to escape the cops and, without Porky Pig's knowing it, had taken the place of the baby. Porky Pig was trying to get him to take his bottle.
When you get through that,
Faye said,
you can read my young love comic.
Lenny looked up at her.
If I have time,
he said. He paused.
You see, I have to go over my report on rattlesnake bites one more time. I'm going to give it in science class for extra credit.
I'd like to hear your report,
the little sister said.
You would?
Lenny said. He had thought they would never ask. He had begun to give up hope.
If you really want to.
The girl nodded.
Well, all right.
Lenny got up quickly. He started for the motel office. He turned on his crutches.
In a lot of ways,
he said,
my report is better than the stuff you see on television. It's...
He paused, searching for the right word.
It's... realer,
he said. Both girls nodded.
I'll be back in a minute,
Lenny said, and he went inside to get his report.
That was
The TV Kid by Betsy Byers, read by Carrie Shale.